Hello, everybody. This is the Dream It Alive show. I'm your host, Ash Kumra, co-founder of DreamItAlive.com. DreamItAlive.com is a global community that guides you to create your dream life with visualization tools, dream boards, and helpful personal development content. Take the next step, become the best version of you. Check out DreamItAlive.com. I love the subject of conscious capitalism. I personally feel that conscious capitalism is the future of sustaining our economy, growing our economy, and also proliferating the numerous entrepreneurs, dreamers, and all the other people that want to make ventures that make the world go better. There are many people in the field right now that have, you know, written books about this. Most famously, John Mackey from the Whole Foods co-founder. He wrote an awesome book on it, and there have been some other books in the past too. There's also been a Conscious Capitalism Summit, and I wanted to talk to someone who I felt is not only understands conscious capitalism, but knows what it takes to take a dream of making the world better and seeing it progress very, very far. So Casey Sheehan is a senior advisor at Backbone Media, and he's also known as the former president and CEO of Patagonia for over 8 years. He's edited for many various awesome outdoor-inspired publications, including Runner's World, Marathoner, Nordic World, and was the editor and publisher of Powder Magazine in the late 1980s. And he has a passion with aligning various environmental organizations, and he had served as the president of the Conservation Alliance. And he and his wife, Tara, are the founders of the Conscious Global Leadership Institute. So, Casey, how are you today?
I'm great. Thank you very much.
Good. So happy to have you here. Casey, I'm just curious, before we jump into conscious capitalism and what it is, tell us about your journey, how you got to become a kind of a global change leader.
Well, you mentioned a number of the little stepping stones along the way. I was a journalist. I was many years a carpenter, a fishing guide. It wasn't until the late 80s that I was coming out of being the editor and publisher of Powder Magazine that I kind of entered a more traditional sporting goods business career, and I got hired by Nike to run their water sports and outdoor sectors, a sector called ACG. And I did that for 4 years. Then I got hired by Merrell Footwear, which is based back in Vermont at that time, and was kind of on a rise. I helped that team from a sales and marketing standpoint. We sold the company to Wolverine Worldwide. And then I came back to kind of my home base in Colorado and ran the Kelty Backpack Company for 7 years. And in the meantime of all that, I had been friends with Yvon Chouinard, who was the owner of Patagonia, and he invited me to come on board with Patagonia in early 2005 is when I came to Patagonia, and stayed there till just about a year ago when I have attempted to retire, but it didn't work out so well for me. I'm back as a senior advisor here for Backbone Media, which is a public relations, media planning, and marketing company here in my hometown of Carbondale, Colorado, and also doing some board work with startup companies, incubator groups, and more traditional outdoor companies in the space. So I'm having a fun time. I'm back on airplanes a little bit more than I thought I would be, but also balancing that out with some life outdoors, some skiing and some fishing and some hiking, and just enjoying being in Colorado.
Okay. Well, you've certainly done a lot, and there's so many things I can ask you. I definitely want to talk about the Patagonia experience, because it's such a huge brand, and it's such an example of what a true conscious brand could be about. You have spoken at things like, you know, various summits, and you have, you know, you created the Conscious Global Leadership Institute. When someone talks to you about conscious capitalism, conscious business, what does that mean to you?
Well, there's a lot of things. I mean, really, it's just words, right? It's actions that really matter. And if you try to kind of talk about the effects of conscious leadership within Patagonia, that's one thing. But to look at it in the broader context of some of the failures of the free market system, that makes it a little more rounded and compelling. I just think that what we saw back with the financial crisis on Wall Street and within the banking industries, we are really starting to outgrow a society based on consumption, It doesn't seem to be providing the kind of good jobs that we had hoped it would. And if you look at it environmentally, you know, all this work has been poisoning the planet. And at the higher level, from a leadership standpoint, I think CEOs have become less and less trusted, to the point where I think Raj Shishada talked about this in his book, where stock analysts actually hire body language experts to catch the CEO's line while they're delivering their 10Q reports every quarter. And it's clear that within the rank and file of companies, that kind of that old command and control style of leadership isn't working anymore, that there's a lot going on with more creative approaches to collaboration and innovation. And I can talk about this, why I see this being more important. And the conscious leadership, to me, is that people have forgotten how positive energy affects those people around you. You know, whatever we do has an effect on someone around us, whether it's our family members or people in the office, whoever. And fundamentally, conscious leadership means that you have a CEO who has a practice of his own, self-actualization, or he's working on himself through meditation, or just trying to be present in the moment and able to engage directly, look people in the eye. And if the CEO's happy, that means that your employees are probably happy, your factories are happy, your vendor partners are happy, your customers are happy. And so what I always say is that conscious leadership is an inside job, because for companies to transform, the individual leaders need to transform. And you'll know what this means if you kind of take it into your personal life. You'll know you're operating in a way that's higher vibe, higher, a more engaged and present way. Is you'll feel more calm and centered and confident. You're able to speak without bringing your ego into play or being angry, and you're perceived as more powerful and effective. And you know, you've seen examples of athletes over the years who talk about being in the zone. Other athletes talk about being in the flow. It's almost like the time just fades away. It's almost meaningless, and you're operating from your best, most natural self. And then when you do that, whether in business or in sports or whatever, the whole activity becomes fun and effortless. And you know, when you're done with the activity or the business transaction, you feel good. Your heart feels like it's opened up, and you feel like you've been effective. So very simply, what conscious leadership means to me is that what's true in the microcosm, which is you as an entrepreneur, effector of change, this becomes true in the macrocosm, in the greater world of business, which is what we're specifically talking about now. And this means that the values that you embody, the stories you tell, the example you set, sets off a huge ripple effect around everybody around you. And I believe that environmental and social responsibility, these are essential components of any business today. We'll talk about that more in the context of purpose. But the companies that are going to prosper for the next 100 years are going to be those that are led with mindfulness, compassion, and soul. So that's really the essence for me when I make a statement about conscious leadership. That's my belief, my take on it. And many others have different takes on it, but that's what resonates for me.
I love that. I mean, mindfulness, compassion, and soul, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just curious because the way you speak and the way you comment on these things, it comes from a lot of experience and just kind of living it. What are some habits you do to stay mindful and stay compassionate? The reason why I ask is because I've interviewed so many fascinating conscious individuals, and you know, even at Dreaming Alive, we encourage you to live your best life. In order to do that, you have to kind of take care of your mind, body, and soul. I'm just curious, what are some habits you do or some habits you've seen others do that you think could help someone get that elevated feeling?
Well, it really helps, you know, to spend some time every day, either in the morning or in the evening, but preferably in the morning when you first get up, and to do some stretching, do some yoga, and which is, for me, is preparation for a 10 to 20 minute meditation session. And that's super easy. That, you know, and without going into huge detail, it just means focusing on your breathing, being in the present moment, not shutting your mind, but if thoughts are coming into your mind, just becoming aware of what they are and trying to look at them as opposed to ignoring them, because there might have been some conflict from the day before that you can have a greater understanding around and see if you can find the root cause of it and how this is, why this is coming up now for you. But I think that's important to become quiet in your mind and come from a place of calm. I also believe it's good to get out in nature, you know, get out for a walk or for a run or an activity at least once a day that puts you out under, you know, under the sun and under the clouds and in the forest, whatever, because it is your part in this universe that connects you to the whole of mankind, of the all the species and all the elements that are on the planet. And you know, you realize when you're out in it as a small speck, part of this giant universe, that the universe has kind of got your back. It's kind of, you know, you realize that things are going to be okay because I belong in this universe. I'm not apart from it. I'm not fighting it. I can kind of navigate through it and feel good being in it. And so that experience in nature is super, 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 super important. It's good for you. And the relaxation you get and the centeredness and the calm you get out of all these activities actually have a genetic benefit. Talking to Deepak Chopra over the last couple of months, he and Rudy Tanzi, who is a professor at Harvard, are proving that just small amounts of beginning meditation can have a positive effect not only on your well-being but on the actual physical composition of your chromosomes. These little telomeres, which are little tails in the chromosomes, actually protect the chromosome from the damages that cause aging, inflammation, and other kind of genetic issues. And if you're meditating, the telomeres are long and healthy, and they they protect you from the effects of aging and actually allow you to actually look healthier, look younger, look more vital, be more calm, be more centered, because you're having a positive impact on your genetic structure. Sounds like, you know, some woo-woo, but there's actually some real science that's about to come out in Deepak's book, which he's calling Super Genes, which I think is going to be published very shortly. And it's all about this self-directed biological transformation. So I think those are important. One other thing I do, and I know you mentioned in your talks about the dream boards.
Yep.
I just launched something I call the Dream Boat. And at the end of 2014 was a pretty tough year for me. I had transitioned out of Patagonia, and I was missing all my colleagues. My dad was very ill. He finally died in June. And so at the end of 2014, I kind of wanted to commemorate my memories of my father and just to let go of what had happened to me in 2014, but also write my intentions for how I wanted to live my life in 2015. So I wrote all these things down, the gratitude for 2014, the intentions for 2015, and I listed all the people who I was thanking in 2014 and all those who I wanted in the boat with me for this next ride into 2015. And I drove down towards Moab, which is about 3 hours from Colorado, and I was with my girlfriend, and we got out of the car on the upper Colorado River. We created this little driftwood raft, and we put three candles into it, and we had written down our intentions on slips of paper. We put those into envelopes, and we attached them to the raft. And then we let this raft loose on the upper Colorado River, and it was a beautiful night. The sun had set, and these little rafts floated away from us down the river until there were little tiny candles flickering almost out of sight. And to me, that was a great, like, letting go of all things that you know, might, you know, cause you suffering or pain from the prior year, just to let those go and then, you know, set a good, you know, intention for what was going to come in 2015. And it felt very, very nice, and it was a very delightful way to begin the process towards a happy new year.
That's amazing. Well, thank you for sharing that. That's a great example. The counterpart to creating a dream board, prior to creating a dream board, is the whole aspect of visualization. What role has visualization played in your life?
Excuse me. Oh, well, visualization is everything. It's really it's the first thing you do when you're setting the course for a new business. It's far beyond strategization and things like that and action planning is kind of seeing with a mental picture what it is you want the outcome to be of all your efforts. And I really believe that is critical, that and, you know, having a strong sense of culture within your organization, whether it's two of you or five of you or 500, those are critical critical components. But visualization and seeing it is really the step towards making it happen in a very very direct and simple way.
Nice. When has visualization worked for you? I'm just curious.
I just see it. I just see it and believe it. And when I do that, I start to try to bring, I start to build the house around what I'm seeing. In other words, I start to put the people in place, the place in place, and develop what the value proposition is going to be. And I start thinking about the channels that it if it's a good or a service, how it is going to be, how it's going to come into contact with the ultimate customer. So it's many things happening simultaneously.
Nice. No, that's a great example. No, I just love to hear your perspective on that, because clearly you've used visualization a lot of things that you're talking about. And I really want to dive into Patagonia and like your experience with it and how you've defined why you felt that's a good conscious brand. But you got my interest peaked when you were talking about all these other aspects like meditation and the mindfulness. What do you think is happening in the self-growth movement right now? Like what do you think there is more awareness of? Like, because right now you just said there's a book coming out by Deepak Chopra on meditation, and that studies have shown this. What do you think is happening in our society right now that's proliferating all this interest in meditation and mindfulness and all those kinds of things? I'm just curious your take on that.
Well, I think that the stock market is one indicator of the health of an economy, for sure. But there's a lot of people who are making money who may not necessarily be happy about how they're making money. And I think that a lot of people are at a certain point in their lives where they may have already made a lot of money, but it's just not fulfilling them. It's like there can never be enough. And so this is why I think for aging baby boomers, but also for this new millennial customer, that they're looking for ways that make money, but also have a higher purpose, which is to, you know, save the environment or to create better social conditions. And the way I kind of encapsulate that is they're interested in businesses whose purpose and values have the intent of elevating mankind on a global basis. This is really what is emerging. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question exactly, but this is this service orientation or this higher purpose for business is what is actually galvanizing companies together right now and allowing them to operate at a much higher level. And because it's like everybody's swimming in the same, you know, same ocean, swimming together or rowing the boat in the same direction, or to use a flock of geese analogy, all flying in the same direction, and different leaders of that flock will emerge to lead the rest of the flock, and they know where they're going because they're flying together. And the only way to get that group, that flock to fly together, is to have a common destination, which, you know, by analogy is a common purpose or values that are guiding that group to go in that direction. You know, Peter Drucker said very beautifully a few years back, he said, good culture trumps good strategy every day of the week. And I think that's pretty powerful, because you can come up with all the ways you want to win based off of product differentiation and marketing and sales tactics. But at the end of the day, you know, the group of people that are developing it, it's always people buying from people ultimately, and what they represent that becomes the most important part of how an entrepreneur becomes successful. So a lot of food for thought. Did I answer that question?
Yeah. No, you actually did. You were talking about on the business sense. I was just curious about society in general also. Like, what do you think is happening with people that you're around? Like, you're going to these – like, I found you just as an example, because you were a speaker at the Success Summit 3.0. I was looking at the speakers and I was like, wow, this is an amazing guy. I want to learn his story. I looked you up and I'm like, wow, you've worked with all these amazing brands and you are like on a path of consciousness and doing things in the business world. I'm just curious, like, from a society wise, what do you think is happening? Like, meditation and mindfulness are so popular now. Why now? What's going on in our society?
Yeah, I just think that people are looking for some help outside of themselves and trying to see if there's other people who can help them not necessarily short-circuit this process of becoming increasingly aware or even enlightened, but certainly wanting to find a path to be better listeners, to be more present, to be more effective and confident. These are all parts of this conscious leadership movement and why some of the leaders themselves have found themselves kind of elevated into higher roles, because they actually are able to get results from these kinds of activities within a company. So it's like what I was saying about everything being in the flow, and athletes kind of realize it when they're in that. The same thing happens in business. When you're in a good business meeting or a board meeting or you're giving a sales presentation, it goes really well. It clicks. It's like, okay, why was that? Because you stopped being focused on your self-image and your, you know, what you were saying. You just spoke from the heart. And that was the most powerful point of connection between you and your audience. And that is what caused that particular transaction to go successfully. So I've been looking at that, and I think that's one of the best pieces of advice I have for aspiring entrepreneurs is that, you know, listen to your heart, what it's telling you. It's going to tell you if you should be doing something and doing more of that, or it's going to tell you you should avoid that. You should avoid a certain person that might want to be involved in your business that you don't feel is a fit or you don't like his values. And you will gravitate towards people that really are a good fit for you on multiple levels, and you'll want to align yourself with those high vibration people because they're the ones that are going to help you be successful and do what you need to do. So I just believe that you've got to look hard at the people you surround yourself with and really try to connect with people who are going to be on the same page with you. Another way to look at that too is that the way businesses are setting up today, and there's sort of an old paradigm of what I call ambitious energy companies, and these would kind of traditionally be kind of 1990s Wall Street companies that were really all about making money, stepping on the necks of competition, very goal-oriented, very much driven by fear and competition, and to a degree ego and self-centricity. In those companies, I won't mention them by names, but some of them are pretty obvious. Some of them struggled as a result of the global economic crisis. They're still in business, but they have a reputation for being kind of singular focused on the bottom line or on shareholder return on investment. And then you have this whole emerging new kind of business, which I call businesses driven by creative energy. And these are what you would call the conscious capitalist companies, driven by passion, driven by this need to elevate mankind, driven by their own sense of purpose and can galvanize a whole group of people around them, very creative, very collaborative, and ultimately end up being very innovative because they have the ability to work together in teams and come up with stuff that's completely out of the box that might be very disruptive to existing ways of doing business. So there's this kind of dichotomy between these kinds of businesses, and I think the creative energy companies are the ones we kind of see as the conscious capitalism companies. And they're the Whole Foods of the world and the Patagonias and the New Belgium Brewing. They're kind of taking the lead there, and they have a tremendously loyal and inspired customer base that want to buy more stuff from them because they're kind of speaking the same language, and they're appealing to that demographic and that psychographic that is connected into doing business in this new way.
I love that. No, thank you for expanding on it. There's a lot of good insight for this, and this is going to be a very, very popular interview, I could tell already. I want to, before we dive into our conclusion, I wanted to just learn more about Patagonia. Like, why you mentioned that it's a conscious brand. I feel it's a conscious brand. Like, what is it about Patagonia that is inspiring the world? Like, what have they done right?
Well, I think there's three things. One is, I mean, they're the clear environmental leader. It's really their singular point of positioning in a pure play way. The money they give away to fund small grassroots environmental organizations, the stand they take on whether they're going to use certain kinds of products and raw materials in the supply chain, creating an emotional connection to the brand with their customer base. And it's probably driving the business more so than any particular strategy. The strategy, although I would argue it is a strategy. And a values-based company, purpose is always more powerful than strategy. Transparency is another key element of their differentiation. And that's just a recognition that when it comes to protecting humans and the environment, we're all on the same team. You know, we're all in this together, and having a company that talks honestly about what's going on, as opposed to hiding things like, well, let me get back to you after I talk to my legal department or my production team, just unafraid to like unabashedly say, hey, we've got this part of it pretty well nailed, but this part we have a lot of work to do, and actually, if you want to go on my website, you can go follow a video camera into a factory and see what's really going on. And you can actually talk to the managers or the line workers of that factory if you want to know more. So, and the third thing is innovation. Are you listening and seeing what's possible and you expounding on that and trying to bring new ways to be a technical innovator? Because that's really, at the end of the day, product wins, and it's really important as part of your strategy to have a major focus on that, whether it's coming out of some sort of incubation program within the company, an R&D facility within the company, or you're hiring outside through some accelerator groups to get that kind of product stimulation happening at a faster rate within your company. So a lot of ways to look at that. Yeah.
Okay. No, that's a great explanation. And my last question to you is just to conclude this whole conversation, which has been totally fascinating, is what advice would you give a younger version of yourself, let's say the 21-year-old version of yourself, and they want to, they started to use their dream board, they started to get into visualization, they started to meditate, they haven't found that dream idea yet, but they're doing all the right things, they're doing all the grounding work, the spiritual work. What advice would you give that younger version of yourself?
Well, I think that, the first part of this process is a lot of research and a lot of soul searching to kind of see what kind of opportunities are out there. And then once you see kind of an area that you want to be in, whether it's a manufacturing sector or it's a service you're providing or it's something new that's completely, web-based or whatever it is, which is where a lot of the action is right now, is like, well, how are you going to do this different? How are you going to bring something that not only excites you, but it's going to reach the customer in a new way that's quite pleasing and efficient for them? I think you have to get into groups of people and really pound through that and do some hard work to gut check each other to make sure you're not just doing something that's already been done or just it's kind of meaningless in terms of what the benefits are for mankind, and make sure you're really, really on the same page and present each day, every day, as if this is your final demo day presentation. Or present it to your higher ups that this is something you're excited about, but you really, really thought it through, because a lot of the action for entrepreneurs is happening in a very short period of time. It's like you get four guys together; they don't have a year on salary somewhere to create the XYZ division and report back to us at the end of the year. It's like, no, you got to come up with something in 30 days. And it better be pretty buttoned up, because it won't get its first round funding or second round funding unless it's really awesome. It's a great idea. It might need some fine tuning. It might need, it's missing a technical element, or it's missing something, but the general idea is pretty clear. And that's exciting, but it's there's a lot of pressure being brought to bear. But again, it's not the same pressure as if you were trying to do it within corporate America and wearing a coat and tie, and you come in and, you know, you do your traditional 2-week orientation and you sign up for your health insurance and, you know, into a cubicle with your computer. It's like, nah, you're thrown right into the wolves, and you've got to make something happen. And I think that's the way future business is going to be conducted, whether it is an incubator situation or it's a group of entrepreneurs trying something on their own that they feel that can be much more successful than the kind of goods and services that have been out there before.
That's awesome. Well, Casey, thank you so much for doing this interview. And more importantly, thank you for being a great role model for conscious business individuals and conscious leaders and conscious people like myself and others. Keep up the great innovations. I can't wait to see what you do in 2015.
Okay. Well, appreciate you having me on the show, and good luck. And we'll talk soon, I hope.
Yeah, that'd be great. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.